This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Solomon Elite, at Solomon Elite NBA on Twitter. You're joined by one of the best play-by-play broadcasters on League Pass, Craig Ackerman of AT&T Sports. Craig, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. So everybody wants to rush and talk about Houston's offseason, and we'll get there. But I just want to rewind real quick and talk about how crazy their season was. Because by this point, everybody knows that they start off 11-14, but I feel like there were several points along the way that just seemed insurmountable for Houston. At what point did you feel like, oh man, I'm not sure if they can come back from this? Like, was there a point like that for you?
It was a very strange season. I'm trying to think back, because it feels like three lifetimes ago, right? When they started off at 11. And 14. I can't honestly remember specific games, but obviously I think, you know, you just go back to opening night when they were blown out by New Orleans. It just felt like something wasn't right. But it's a very long season. I have full confidence in the front office and the players and the coaches. I always thought that the talent level was there to get things headed in the right direction. But I think when, you know, the Rockets suffered multiple injuries there, you know, just basically on the tail end of that 11-14, I think that's when I really started to get worried that, you know, maybe they don't have enough to get this headed in the right direction. And then, of course, at that point, James Harden just kind of took over for the next couple of months and put up ridiculous historic level numbers and brought the team back from the abyss. But yeah, again, it feels like so long ago at that point. So much has happened since then. Obviously, they did a lot to restructure their roster over the course of the season. But I really thought that at that juncture that, you know, maybe they just don't have enough to get this ship headed in the right direction. But then James just went off, and they basically went from 14th to near the top of the standings in the West, to put themselves in a viable position to play for one of those top two or three seeds. Ultimately, they didn't get there with that loss late in Oklahoma City and the craziness that ensued on that particular night. But it was a very interesting season, to say the very least.
Yeah, so the last time I saw you, it was before Game 6, and I remember I was going around asking everyone who they thought was going to win that game, and almost everyone I asked, including yourself, felt like the Rockets should have won that game. They were healthy, they were on their home floor, the Warriors didn't have Kevin Durant. Last year, you could always say, well, if Chris Paul didn't go down, Houston would have won that series, and it would have been perfectly reasonable for you to feel that way. This year, they didn't have something like that to fall back on. Was this loss to the Warriors more or less deflating than last year's, in your opinion?
I think every season-ending loss is deflating. At least it is to me personally. I think there are, and this is a little bit cliche, but I think they were both. Okay, let's just go back 2 years ago. We'll start there. Even after Chris Paul went down, the Rockets were up in that series, had double-digit leads in both games. I thought the Rockets, that was an opportunity loss. They were in position to win one or both of those games in game 6 or 7 on their home floor to advance to the NBA Finals. And so to me, that was extremely deflating, because even without Chris, they put themselves early on in both of those games, put themselves in position to win each game. Ultimately did not. The weird, again, strange circumstances with the 0-for-27 in game 7 from 3. I mean, if the Rockets took those exact same shots all over again, they're not going to miss 27 straight. It was just really weird and fluky. It does seem like that when the Rockets do get eliminated, and that's been that case for the last decade, that when they go out, they go out. There's always something that hurts when their season comes to an end. This year, similar in that it was a missed opportunity. I do think that Golden State ultimately, even without Durant, if you looked at their roster, had more talent from top to bottom than the Rockets did. And 95% of the time in the NBA, the team with the best talent, especially the team with more of the high-end talent, wins. And they certainly still had more of that than the Rockets did under the circumstances. So I think you can understand them continuing to play well and ultimately get past Rockets and the Blazers, and obviously what happened with all their injuries in the NBA Finals, so the Raptors ultimately losing that. But it was a missed opportunity. It was on their home floor. I think that is what really hurt, is that they had a chance to push that to a Game 7 again back in Oakland. Anything and everything can happen in a Game 7, as we saw again 2 years ago in Houston. And so I thought they were both equally deflating. I think with recency bias, this one really hurt because of the fluky nature of the 0-for-27 the year before. This one really felt like, and who knows how things would have turned out in Game 7, but this really felt like it was a chance for the team to get back to a Game 7 and to try to sort of erase the bad memories from a year ago. But as the Warriors kept things close in Game 6, you just felt like you were opening the door for them to walk through it and win the game, and ultimately they did. They trapped Curry, and they consistently kept beating the Rockets on those high traps. Draymond Green was terrific there. Curry just went crazy down the stretch after being an absolute no-show in the first half. And so, to me, every time a season ends, it's deflating. Each time it seems like it's for a little bit of a different reason. But as we still sit here today, a month after the Rockets got eliminated, I still feel like the Rockets, at the very least, missed a really, really good chance, a golden opportunity to push that to Game 7. But, they didn't do it, and here we are, and we're getting ready for another offseason.
Yeah, I'll never get over Andre Iguodala going 5-for-8 from three-point range after pretty much missing every single three-pointer the games before and the games afterwards.
He's hit some shots in the playoffs in his career. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. And it seems like every time that the Warriors needed a big three late in games, not just in Game 6, but that whole series, every time they play the Warriors, Draymond Green always steps in and hits a big shot. I mean, the Rockets have been unable to solve the Warriors' puzzle, and as that's been the case for most teams in the league, and they will, they'll continue to try to do it moving forward, although things have really changed now with the injuries to Thompson and Durant.
Yeah, and listen, we don't make light of injuries on this podcast, but the facts are the facts. I've been someone who's argued for continuity, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. As of the time this recording, it's been 12 hours since the Toronto Raptors won the NBA championship, and we received word that Klay Thompson has torn his ACL and will likely miss action for at least the next 9 months. It's also been 56 hours since we received word that Kevin Durant received surgery for his ruptured Achilles injury. ACL and Achilles injuries are two of the worst injuries in basketball. So first I want to say I hope those guys have full and meaningful recoveries. But as of right now, even if the Warriors manage to re-sign both of them, we know for a fact that both Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson will miss the majority of next season with those injuries. The Rockets are likely going into next season, as of right now, at worst, as one of the two favorites to win the Western Conference, because we don't know if another strong contender forms through free agency. But I say this all the time, this is why you keep a core together. Like, you never know when a window of opportunity opens up like this for you. Let's pretend you're Daryl Morey. What direction do you choose to go with the Rockets?
Well, I'll say this. Even before the Thompson and Durant injuries, I thought the Rockets were in a pretty unique place, in that if you take a sort of a step back in a full length view of things, even, again, this is before the injuries, the Rockets are still amongst the handful of best teams in the league. 2 years ago, they were amongst the two best teams in the league. If you take a step back now, they're amongst the handful of best teams in the league. Again, this is prior to free agency and these injuries and so forth. And so I thought that if there were avenues and mechanisms to greatly improve this team. You have to explore them, and if you can get it done, you get it done. But at the same time, the call to strip it all the way down and rebuild everything. Everybody needed to kind of hit the pause on that, because the Rockets are still going to be really, really good. And again, you never, never know. And you still have James Harden in his prime, and you're not going to punt on what is remaining of his prime. And so that was before the injuries. Now, after the injuries, I think you have to even take a little bit more of a cautious approach. But I know our front office has always been aggressive. It's always easier said than done getting these deals done and to improve your team, because they're only, in my opinion, 10 or 12 true difference makers in the league. You have one of them, and so you want to try to maximize that as much as possible. But since those guys, two guys went down, the West is truly wide open. The irony is that when you look at the teams in the West, the Rockets are going to be keep competing with, I think, five of the top seven teams in the league with available cap space this summer are out West. And so teams like the Clippers and the Lakers and the Mavs and the Jazz have real ways to really improve their team directly through free agency. The Rockets are going to have to try to get creative in their approach via the trade to try to improve their roster dramatically to keep up with everybody in the West. But they're kind of walking a little bit of a fine line here going into the offseason. There's no reason to panic. There's no reason to strip it down to its studs. But at the same time, I think you do have to stay aggressive as possible. But the Rockets will be limited. And so I think with that in mind, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out this summer from Daryl Morey's perspective, because I think ultimately, again, you're going to have to probably, you mentioned keeping the core together, if you're going to dramatically improve this team, you're probably going to have to pluck some of that core away via the trade to try to upgrade your roster. But you have to do it in a judicious way, because you don't want to just trade these guys just to simply trade them. Because you still, especially now coming off those injuries, the West is wide open. And if you don't want to break it up too much, because, again, I think if this team does in some form or fashion return intact, especially their core intact, they have a legitimate shot to be as good as anybody in the West again at a chance to come out. I know some people really don't want to hear about that at this particular point, because there is such disappointment following what transpired again this past offseason. This past postseason against Golden State, but it is good. It will be a very unique and interesting summer for the Rockets, and I think an important one, because again, as I mentioned, I think five of the top seven teams in the league with cap space are all out in the West, and so these are teams they're competing against, and they have much easier paths to improve their team this summer than the Rockets do.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned hitting the pause button and asking folks not to panic, because over the past couple weeks, I've become increasingly uncomfortable with the conversation around Chris Paul, more specifically how people talk about him. Like, every time his name comes up this offseason, I can't remember one time it hasn't been like this, but it's always how bad his contract is, or his age, or how much he's declining, or there's no way the Rockets could possibly trade him. And it's kind of like we're talking about Chris Paul as if he's a burden and not like a ridiculously good basketball player on both ends of the floor that's really impactful. And I wrote about this week, but if you trade Chris Paul, there's a slim to none chance that you get a package back that increases your title odds for next season versus keeping them. And I don't think people fully understand this. The Rockets are a team that wants to win now. They knew damn well what they were doing when they signed that contract. They knew his age. They knew his injury history. They didn't care, because they knew having Chris Paul is a hell of a lot better than not having Chris Paul. You watched him up close and personal this year. Where do you stand on this?
I agree. I mean, look, there's no denying that he's on the downside of his career arc.
Sure.
As you mentioned, I think everybody knew that going in. I think, again, the contract ultimately, in terms of the easier ways to improve the team, is a burden. And again, I think that was, as you mentioned, was sort of understood going in, and is certainly the case now. But Chris Paul is still a very, very good NBA player. And as you mentioned, I think that if you – and I think he fits with the way the Rockets want to play. I know a lot of people have talked about the desire for the team to play faster. But I think since Chris Paul's arrival and the fact that, you know, about a year and a half ago when they slowed their pace all the way down, a lot of the turnovers that a lot of people were complaining about have basically dropped off the table. So their possessions are a little bit more valued than they previously have been. By the way, there is no correlation to pace in winning in the NBA. The reason why people want to play faster, and quite frankly, Mike D'Antoni would prefer the team play faster, is that you increase possessions in the game, and especially with a team that has one of the best point per possession totals in the history of the sport. If there are more possessions, it increases the likelihood of you scoring points, which ultimately increases the likelihood of you scoring. But there is no direct correlation to pace per se and winning. And so sometimes if you trade off turnovers for pace of play, then you can kind of live with some of that. But I just, at this stage of Paul's career in the contract, I think it is very difficult to find even 50 cents on the dollar for an equal trade value. I don't think any player's contract, as we've seen in the past, the guy just jumps to mind is Joe Johnson, is untradeable. I think everybody is ultimately tradable in the league, but I still think Chris Paul is a very good NBA player that is certainly well-respected around the league, still has a lot to give. Ultimately, you have to monitor his health moving forward. But I agree. I don't think ultimately if you do deal him that you're going to put yourselves in a better position than you are currently with him on the roster to ultimately compete for a championship.
Yeah, and you mentioned pace. It's funny because if you actually watch the game, it seems like Chris Paul likes to run more than Harden, actually. Like, in transition opportunities, it seems like Chris Paul is more likely to, like, pester the ref. Like, come on, give me the ball back. I got to run. Like, more than James Harden would like to. He likes to slow the pace down, likes to find the open shooter, take his time. And Chris Paul is more apt to run the basketball. So it's kind of weird to hear people complain about that, but it is a thing.
No, they want to push the pace. Because, right. Again, and as you mentioned, they want to increase the amount of possessions. Mike D'Antoni would prefer to play faster because, again, you increase the amount of possessions and a chance to score. But you also have to look at the personnel. The Rockets in the first half of the year, if I remember correctly, you can correct me if I'm wrong, so 2 years ago when they acquired Chris Paul, the Rockets were playing significantly faster than they were in the second half of the season. But I think another reason why they slowed down dramatically is that P.J. Tucker became a full-time starter with them. And so sometimes you kind of have to look at your personnel. Do you have the type of wings who can get out and run and push? And another thing is you want to try to get into the half court. Even bad half court NBA defenses are tough to score on. And so you want to try to get into your stuff quicker before teams ultimately can get set because it becomes much more difficult to score in that way. But sometimes you have to play to the strengths of your personnel. And when James Harden, his first handful of years with the Rockets, they're amongst the league leaders in pace. And so I certainly think he's capable of doing that, but I think ultimately you also have to look at the rest of your personnel. Does that personnel work to really get up and down the floor? How much are possessions valued? Because with the Rockets' decrease in pace also came with an astronomical decrease in turnovers, and so possessions became a little bit more valued there. And again, if you still look at the way the Rockets' point per possession went with their decreased pace, they're still amongst the greatest offensive teams in NBA history. And so I think there's a little bit of, a fine line that you have to walk there. You have to kind of understand your personnel. I think ultimately the Rockets, I think everybody's been saying this, and I'll echo the sentiments. They've got to get longer. They've got to get more athletic. They've got to get more versatile on the wing. That's where the game is going. And I think if you do add those pieces to the team, those components to the team this summer, then I think you will see more opportunities for the team to really push the pace and try to score in transition, at least more so than we've seen in the last year and a half.
Right. And I agree. Like, if you look at the roster, this is an older team compared to the other contenders in the NBA, and older teams tend to slow the pace down. So it makes perfectly. I think Mike D'Antoni even understands himself that this team can't run at the level of Golden State.
Well, Golden State runs off turnovers.
Right.
Most of their transition opportunities come off turnovers. And so, again, the Rockets' sole focus has been over the last couple of years, how do we compete with Golden State, well, we're going to switch everything on defense, right? Because we want to try to ISO Kevin Durant as much as possible. The guy scores 50 points against us, and he's taking 25, 22-foot twos. Then we tip our cap, and we live with it, and we move on. That's the whole. That was the whole rationale behind switching. How do we take Golden State out of their beautiful motion offense? Well, we switch everything and we force them into ISOs and we live with the results. What is another area that Golden State excels in? Well, if you turn the ball over against them and you get them playing downhill off turnovers, then you're finished. You're done. You cannot keep up with them. You can't score them. And so you slow things down. You value possessions. You don't turn it over quite as much. And you don't give them as many opportunities to run at you and score and transition the other way. And so I think that's another sort of component into this. A lot of people will argue that the Rockets have not been able to compete with Golden State because of their system. I guarantee you the Rockets have tons of data and research to prove, none of which obviously they'll probably share publicly, that they'll prove that it's because of their system that they've been able to play with Golden State at a level that most teams in the league have not managed to do so over the last couple of years.
No, I agree. And if you mentioned slowing the pace down, I mean, when you talk about Golden State style play, I mean, they like to switch everything on defense too, and that tends to make the Rockets isolate more often than not. And they get an entire season to isolate under their belt. They know how to isolate against the best of the best, and right. You can score against Golden State more efficiently that way. And you mentioned Mike D'Antoni preferring to slow the pace down with his older roster, and I'm glad you brought him up. So last week, the Rockets visited D'Antoni's home in West Virginia and approached him with a contract offer that increased his base salary to $5 million. The problem is that it seems like they did this without his agent, Warren Legere, present, and Legere wasn't comfortable with this, and his new contract was not reached. All indications as of this moment, and I want to stress as of this moment, point to D'Antoni coaching out next season without an extension. I'm someone who believes, listen, I don't think you're going to find a better person for the job on the open market than Mike D'Antoni. His relationship with the players in that locker room, including James Harden, are invaluable. And I think if the Rockets believe this internally, it's much better for both parties to get an extension done sooner rather than later. Craig, do you believe the situation will get resolved? And where do you stand on D'Antoni as a coach for this team?
I like Mike a lot. I mean, I like him a ton. He makes life a lot easier for all of us. He's very accommodating. He's kind of just a regular Joe, if you will. I've really enjoyed his tenure here, and I hope that he continues to stay. As far as the contract negotiations between the two sides, I have as much knowledge about this as you do in terms of what I read out there, so I have no idea ultimately what will get done, what won't get done. You know, it's a business both ways. From my personal perspective, I hope he sticks around because I think the results speak for themselves since he's been here. Again, yes, they have not been able to overcome Golden State, but I think that this Golden State team is one of the five best teams in terms of their talent level ever assembled. I think you can make a strong argument that they have the greatest high-end talent that's ever been put on a basketball floor in the league. There are no asterisks in sports. Golden State took advantage of injuries en route to their three championships. Ultimately, Toronto took advantage of the Warriors' injuries to win their first championship. And so, to me, there are no asterisks. When you win a championship, you earn it because there is a bit of a war of attrition involved there. But I think Mike D'Antoni has done as good of a job with this roster as one can expect. I know there's a lot of people who don't necessarily think that the Rockets' current style of play is very appealing, and that's okay, but I do think that there is a method to the madness. That's why they do what they do. It's kind of touched upon that a little bit here. And again, I hope Mike is here long-term. I hope two sides ultimately come to an agreement of some sort, but in terms of whether I think it's going to get done, do I have any idea if it's going to get done? I have no idea. I just hope it does.
Yeah, I agree too. I think Mike's the guy. I think if you look out at the open market and head coach, it's just really hard to evaluate whether a younger coach is going to work or not. You just never know. And again, I think that the relationships, particularly with James Harden, like I've never seen James Harden bond with a coach more than D'Antoni. He defends him openly in the media, in private, everywhere. Like he is a fan of Mike D'Antoni, and I think that stuff's really important. And I think you mentioned the Rockets don't care if it's ugly or not. They care if it works. They don't care what you think of the style of play. They don't care if people find, you know, the slowing down the pace, the ref baiting, all that stuff. They don't care if people find that unappealing. They just care points per possession. Is this winning us basketball games more than the general competition? And it has been. It's won them a ton of basketball games. It's won them. It's got them to the conference finals and nearly the NBA finals a year ago. So I don't think the Rockets particularly care how the public perceives it. Going into the offseason, let's get into the fun stuff. What specifically outside of the coaching staff do you believe that the Rockets need to address?
Well, I just mentioned, I think, in part, they have to get longer and more athletic on the wings. The teams that the Rockets really struggle against are those teams that are pretty long and athletic. On the wings. I mean, we're obviously going back, and this is, you know, revisionist history here, but let's just, for argument's sake, say the Rockets did beat the Warriors and ultimately did advance to the NBA Finals. And I think if they had met, say, Milwaukee, I think that would be an opponent in a matchup that they would struggle with because of their length and athleticism. I think a team, if they had faced Philadelphia, for instance, their length and size and athleticism would have been problematic to the Rockets. And so I think moving forward, and again, easier said than done because Rockets are capped out and they don't have a ton of tools to work with here to improve the team. And there are, again, as I've already illustrated, there are a lot of teams out there with a lot of cap space this summer, and most of them are teams that they're directly competing with for the top honors. In the West, they've got to get more athletic on the wing. They've got to get younger. You look at the Raptors. You got Siakam. I know OG Anunoby had some injury surgery issues and so forth. But players like that, they need long, lengthy, versatile, switchable, multi-dimensional guys, and every team in the league wants them. So again, easier said than done, but those are the kinds of players that the Rockets need, I think, to ultimately take the next step.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you look at the difference between this offseason and the last offseason. It felt like last offseason was like the priority was don't regress, like don't get worse. And you look at this offseason, there are like a tremendous opportunity to get better. There's actually needs that you can address. I mean, you look at their rebounding, for instance. I mean, they were not a good defensive rebounding team at all this season, and that's
their greatest weakness.
Yeah, that's a need that they can address. You look at their versatility on the wing. They can address that too. You look at a ton of things that they couldn't address last year, just because it's like, how can you get better from a 65-win team that just reached the Western Conference Finals? Well, you can get better now. You can get better now. There are a ton of opportunities to get better because this team has clear weaknesses that they can address, and they have more to work with. They have their taxpayer mid-level exception. They have it looks like owner Tillman Fertitta has given Daryl Morey the green light to pay the luxury tax this season. So they'll be able to spend more this season. And via trade, they have all their guys locked in for at least the next season. So they don't have to worry about retaining guys. They can just worry about, you know, perhaps making a trade here or there and only trying to improve the roster. So I think the opportunity to improve the roster is actually better than where it was last season, just because there was no room to improve last year. Like last year, they reached pretty much the pinnacle of basketball. You can't get much better than that. And I think if you look at going into this offseason, I really feel like they have a strong opportunity to address not only some needs, but, you know, perhaps take a few more swings that they couldn't have last offseason.
I can't obviously get into specific players who are going to be free agents because they're still not technically there, but they're not technically unrestricted free agents yet. But they have the taxpayer at mid-level. But I think if they're going to improve dramatically, they're going to have to trade players like Clint Capella and or Eric Gordon. I don't think ultimately with the taxpayer mid-level and so forth that they're going to be able to – they're looking to upgrade significantly. I don't think they're going to be able to upgrade significantly with that kind of money because a lot of teams have a lot more money to spend. And I think there is a good free agent class, but then you now add the question marks with Thompson and Durant. It's very, very good at the very top levels, but I think again there are a lot of teams, a lot of money to spend. I think ultimately there are going to be a lot of players who do get overpaid this summer, not quite like it was in 2016 when the cap spiked, the level of spending in the league was just crazy. But there are going to be a lot of players who are going to get overpaid this summer because a lot of teams have a lot of money to spend, and these are who the Rockets are going to be competing with, and that mid-level ultimately is not going to be enough there. That's the kind of money they're going to need to sort of work around and fill out the depth of the team. But the way they're going to improve dramatically is via the trade, and so I think they are going to ultimately have to pluck some of the guys out this core if that's the avenue they're going to go. And they don't have any draft picks available either. So I think that do they have some more mechanisms this summer than they had last summer, perhaps? But I still think relative to the rest of the league, they're still very limited. But again, this is they're going to get creative. We have seen them get creative. Does it get done or not? I don't know. But they'll try, and we'll just kind of see what happens. But ultimately, I think they're going to the biggest need for them is they've got to get longer. Got to get more athletic. Who those guys ultimately will be, I do not know. Obviously, if you trade a guy like Clint, and I know a lot of people were down on Clint's performance in that second round against Golden State, and he struggled mightily, more so than I think he did even the year before in the Western Conference Finals when he was very inconsistent against Golden State. But Clint is still a very, very good player, and so if he's a guy who, and he's on a value contract, if he's a guy that you're going to move, you got to make sure that you get pretty darn good value in return for him. Draymond Green has his number. There's no other way around it. I thought he would have more of an impact against Golden State than he has each of the last two postseasons, but Draymond Green has completely removed him from the Rockets' equation, and I think in part that's while the Rockets, at least the last couple of years, have not been able to get over the hump against the Warriors. But if you're going to move a guy like that, then you had better get strong value because Clint's a perfect fit for this team. He's got incredible chemistry with James Harden, and he does happen to excel against virtually everybody outside of Draymond Green and Golden State.
Yeah, like Clint gets 70% of his points off of lob passes, and Draymond Green just completely took that lob pass away. Like, he just completely took him out of the series. It was incredible to watch him play that level of defense. But listen, man, this is going to be fun. This is going to be Daryl Morey, like, no offseason. I've said this for years now, but I really believe it. No offseason with the Rockets has ever been boring under Daryl Morey. Like, good or bad, it's always fun. It's always interesting.
It is. Sometimes, I joke about this. This is just a straight joke here, but sometimes I think, the more complicated the trade to try to pull off, the more enjoyment he gets out of it. If it's just a regular kind of trade, then I think he gets bored with stuff like that.
Yeah, he likes the challenge.
The more complicated the deal, the better. But I think, again, they'll try to get creative. Will they get something major done? I don't know, but I go back to my original point of even before the Durant and Thompson injuries and the now wide open West with those two guys and their respective situations and the Warriors moving forward, I still think that you have to take a step back, realize that this is still one of the five best teams in the league. They still have a legit shot for another deep playoff run. If you kept the core together and just tried to improve the depth of this team moving forward, probably even more so now, again, with those injuries. And so I think that with that, if they aren't able to make significant changes this summer, it's not necessarily the end of the world because I still think they're going to be really, really good moving forward. And if you can improve the depth of the team, if you can somehow find a way to add a couple of lengthy, long, athletic guys on the wing to allow this team to play a little bit differently, then I still think they're going to be amongst the five best teams in the league next year. And who knows? I mean, teams like the Lakers and the Jazz and the Mavs all might improve dramatically. They might not. Teams like the Bucks have a ton of key free agents. They might ultimately take a step back. Are they willing to make that? And that team's about to get super expensive. What is Philadelphia going to do with their free agents? Will they ultimately spend huge to bring that team back? Will those guys come back? A lot of things are going to play out this summer. A lot of pieces will be moving around the chessboard this summer. And as you said, I think it's going to be a really fascinating offseason to see not only what the Rockets do, but all the teams that are in the upper echelon the league are going to do to try to take advantage, for the lack of a better phrase, of what might be some problems with Golden State, with Durant and Thompson down. I'm fascinated to see what happens. But I still think, again, the Rockets, even if they don't make a huge splash this summer, I still think they're going to be really, really good. But I do think what's more important this year than it was a year ago is I think they need to be better on day one. Because 2 years ago, they knew the value of having home court advantage throughout. They had that game 7 on their floor in the Western Conference Finals. Didn't take advantage of it because the fluky over 27, but they had that game 7 on their home floor. I think they fully realize how important it is to have the best team they can have on day one as opposed to coming out of the trade deadline. I think this, whatever group that they're going to assemble, they need to try to assemble the best group they possibly can on day one so they have that mentality and mindset going into the season so they don't have to try to overcome an 11-14 start again.
Well said. Craig, where can we follow you on Twitter?
@CA_Rocket.
Thank you so much for coming on, Craig.
Anytime, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
For sure. So that was the great Craig Ackerman of AT&T Sportsnet. I really do mean it when I say he's one of the best commentators on League Pass. He makes the Rockets broadcast so much better, so much more insightful, and so much better for fans of this team to follow along. Make sure to follow him on Twitter and give this podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We're also on Spotify now if you want to listen to us there. And yeah, guys, good night.